range it should have been up to hit us with ease. As I hit it, wasn't trying to kill us, didn't even hit Nigel.
Ma'am, we've contacted Base to provide further information. We should hear back from them soon.
Do you have any idea what I had to do to get those scouts here? It was your gold moment out there.
There's a car at the end of the street. We should try and commandeer it.
Right, we know what we're up against. All corridors and air conduits to be locked down. We need to get rid of anything and anywhere that thing can hold up.
I'll get the weapons.
Everyone goes armed.
You are listening to the Late Bloomer Actor Podcast with David John Clark.
My guest today is a great friend of mine, having met in 2015 as supporting actors on a MAPS student film, a short film called Frequency, arguably one of the best short films I've been involved in so far, thanks to the up-and-coming director Rebecca Dunker. My guest was born in Cheshire, England, a year before me. I wasn't born in England, though, and immigrated to Australia in the mid-1970s with her parents. Her employment background is an accomplished audiovisual technician, which led her into her love of acting. She is a 2019 South Australian Screen Award nominee for Best Female Performance and also received the Award of Merit for Acting in the 2021 Southern Shorts Awards. She has also written and directed her first short film, Untitled Thoughts, a short film about mental health, which has done extremely well on the festival circuit. Nicknamed Harley by childhood friends due to her love of Harley Davidson motorcycles, please welcome to the podcast the most awesome Eva Rieslett. I said it wrong, didn't I?
It's okay.
Yeah, you can say it right for me because I don't speak French. How do we say it?
Jelak, but it's actually a Polish sound.
Jelak.
But it's that soft G sound at the beginning, like je m'appelle.
And it's so much easier now that I've heard it again.
You'll never forget it now.
Firstly, though, I must congratulate you on your latest award at the Southern Australian Screen Awards, the Mercury Rising Award.
Thank you.
I believe this one caught you completely off guard.
It did. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was. I still can't process it right now. I haven't had a chance to actually talk to anyone about it, actually, apart from my partner here. But anyone from the industry, Thank you, David.
I don't know a lot about this award. I think I've seen it before, but do you know much about it?
This was the first year that they did the Mercury Rising Award, and it's awarded to an up-and-coming industry who is a member of Mercury CX.
Beautiful. And did you fall out of your chair?
I don't remember a damn thing. So I don't remember anything. I do remember I couldn't walk. So I'm stumbling through the chairs and I'm over people and I'm like swearing because I'm a big swearer, which is terrible. That's all I remember. And then I was out the door and I was being introduced to people and having my photo taken with Karina and somehow I got back into the cinema to the awards ceremony to watch the rest of the ceremony. So it's all a blur.
It's beautiful. I was at a dinner engagement that I had to go to, hence I wasn't at the awards, but the awards were popping up on my Facebook feed that I was rudely watching over time.
Must have been a great dinner party.
And then all of a sudden I saw this big photo of you and the award and I almost fell out of my chair. So I was very excited for you.
Well, thank you. You were the first to congratulate me. So thank you very much for that. That was awesome.
You know me, I'm very quick when it comes to social media. All righty. Before we get right into it, can you just tell us a little about yourself, your background into acting and why or do you consider yourself to be a late bloomer actor as well?
I guess I am a late bloomer actor because I've done most of my largest body of work has been later in life. I actually always wanted to be, fantasized about being an actor, being a performer. So I kind of grew up on those older, Debbie Reynolds, Doris Day, Barbara Streisand, all those old classic old musicals that carried on into the 70s, late 60s. I was like, that would be so cool. It looks so glamorous. It looked fun. It could be anybody but me. But it was never presented to me as a viable career choice. growing up, it was, you know, you had to be lucky to be able to do that. It was never presented to me as something that I could work towards and achieve.
Like at school, you mean?
Yeah, well, no, by my parents, I guess, more. No, you know, okay. Nothing. And that's fine. They were trying to raise us the best that they could. But I got into high school and I did do drama purely so that I could act. And then I think the year, so 1989 was the year that I graduated. I'm 48 years old, not ashamed to say it. I'll be 49 next week. Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. But 1989 was the first year that drama could be a graduating subject. So points could go towards being graduated. So I did that. And it was the year before, sorry. There was a end of year production that we had to do, but going to an all girls high school, you know, everybody was the prima donna. Nobody wanted to do the backstage stuff, the sound, the lighting, the set design, any of that. So I kind of rolled my eyes and went, oh God, okay, I'll do it then. So I gave up the opportunity to be, you know, to be an actor, to, you know, just, I don't know, take one for the team and do what needed to be done. And it just turned out I was good at it. And that dictated my life from there on. And
beautiful.
So I worked in, I toured a lot with bands in Adelaide and around Australia doing lighting or audio, depending. So I built up a good network there. And then I started in theatre. Television, so I worked for Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 10. I started out in the lighting department but then became multi-skilled as production opportunities became smaller. It just paid to be multi-skilled, so I picked up audio, floor management, director's assistant, even doing the porter prompt. And
wow.
Then I got more heavily involved in corporate theatre, so doing a lot of audiovisual events for corporate events. And at some point, it would have been the early 2000s. I'll go back a little bit. Oh, yeah, it was the early 2000s, the year 2000 when I went, oh, hold on, I've always wanted to perform. I've always wanted to act and sing. And because of my connections in the music industry, I started taking some singing lessons and people found out, oh, Harley can actually sing. Let's take her to China on tour. So that was my first gig, was touring China
wow.
I look back and I go, wow, I actually did some pretty cool stuff. I'm not a piece of shit. Anyway, but so I toured China, all the Hard Rock cafes and the Shangri-La hotels and resorts, the great bunch of guys. And so managed to get a foot in the door, singing with a lot of bands, a lot of party bands around Adelaide, a lot of original bands, all-girl punk band. My last one was a metal band, and I still do some duo and acoustic stuff. But then I started working more and more in tech and just singing on the weekends, and that's around about 2006. I stepped back and went, no, hold on. Let's step back again and get back on the performance directory and start acting. So I took on plenty of acting workshops, as many as I could. I just ate that up. And even because at the time because I'd worked so much, I had the money that so I could go to Melbourne and Sydney and do workshops over there and just soak things in. And there was one audition I got was for a company called the Sudden Impact Entertainment Company. And I got the audition and I performed with them. It was at Prison Break Live. It was a walkthrough attraction. It was at the Royal Adelaide Show. I'm not sure if you remember.
I remember that one. I remember hearing. What year was that?
That would have been 2007, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Did you do that more than once?
They did Prison Break 2 years in a row. Then they did Terminator, which was a laser tag. And then they did a Lara Croft Tomb Raider in 3D. And that was the last job they did in Adelaide. So I kept going back to them because they found out that I was a technician. Say, hey, do you want to come back next year? You have to re-audition for a part, but, you know, you can help us build the set and give us some, you know, tips and advice on, you know, just be their go-to tech person.
And we'll pay you twice, right? They said that, didn't they?
Which was good.
Beautiful.
And then my work with them became more involved as a technician. So now I'm their technical director. And, again, I've had to step back and go, no, hold on, I really want to perform. And they've been really good, actually, to work with whenever I've had an opportunity to be in a short film or in a stage production. They've allowed me that time off to come back and do it, which has been good. So it's kind of judging in between that. Long and convoluted. There you go.
Oh, that's beautiful. I should do an interview with all my friends like this and learn everything that I don't know.
You knew it.
I knew a lot of that.
You stalk me.
Yes. And is that the same company you're still working for now around the world?
My last job with them was in November 2019. Yes. And thank you, COVID. Haven't been working as much for them, at all for them, which has given me time to get back into the acting and workshops and auditioning. And I have done a few short things, and it also gave me a chance to concentrate on my own short film and just exploring the world of directing and producing. But I've got to be careful now that although I love writing and directing and producing, I love it, I've got to remember, no, I've got to give myself that time to do my true passion, which is acting. So.
Because otherwise you end up in the same spot.
Yeah, that's right, the same cycle. So I've just got to...
deep into some sort of film or directing something. You go, but I love doing this, but I want to be in front of the camera.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about me.
So that sort of leads me to then, so why acting then? If you've got this, you've got such a rounded ability for experience and skill sets, which is brilliant, especially in the acting world, you need something to pay the bills. So if you have that... to fall back on, especially that background that you have, you've got so much ability to be able to feed yourself, as they say. What keeps bringing you back to acting, and what is driving you forward to be wanting to be on front of the screen, in front of the camera?
I don't think it's so much about wanting to be in front of the camera, but about... I know this sounds a bit miserable, but I relish the opportunity to be anybody but me. I like the idea of exploring a different way of thinking, making choices that are not natural to me. I like pushing those limits. I've never stopped learning, craving to learn things. If there's stuff in my work or what I need to do, I will watch YouTube videos, I'll do workshops, I'll take courses, I will read. I just love learning a new thing to do. And acting is, there is that thrill of being in front of the camera or being on stage and being seen and being acknowledged for it. But the process, I'm addicted to that. Did that answer your question? I just gone around. Yeah.
A lot of actors, they like being a different character is one side, but others say they like doing the different circumstances. You sort of leaned a little bit there that you like to do things that... Do you mean that you like to take on a character that the character's doing things that you wouldn't do yourself as a person, so to experience... different journeys sort of thing?
Yeah.
To reach out
absolutely.
Emotionally?
And to understand why as well, to not just, know that part of the script is making a certain choice, but the reasoning behind it. And I know when I watch a lot of films and videos, like a lot of content, I'm always curious about the choices and in the writing and like why did the character do that when this happened, and sometimes it seems contradictory, but I don't even know where I was going with that, but but again that comes back to that whole natural way of thinking, like naturally, instinctively, that's what I would do personally, but if I was that person, I wouldn't do it. So it's a struggle to understand why they would make that choice. But I like that journey to work it out. Like our friend, Mr. Seymour, says, doing your detective work, it's always stuck with me.
I have sitting here right in front of my computer all the Mr. Seymour top, The top 9 questions, the real life actor approach. Who are you? Where are you?
Yeah.
What is the relationship to the other character in the scene? What's happening? What's the problem? What do you want? Should you get what you want? Why should you get what you want? Speak English, David. And what's stopping you from getting it? How do you plan to get it? So, that's, yeah, exactly. My favourite. It's like my Bible. Not that I'm religious.
Yes, you are.
So bringing up Mr. Jeff Seymour, a.k.a. the real life actor, and we've both done a few workshops with him, what training have you done in your journey or are still doing or would like to do?
So currently at the moment, because it's difficult for me to get out into workshops here where I am, I do a lot of online, and I know they've copped a bit of flack, but Masterclass actually have some workshops on there with Helen Mirren, Natalie Portman, and there's also some writing workshops with Aaron Sorkin because I really love his style of dialogue that he writes. So I'm kind of eating those up at the moment just to get their points of views and their methods in, and particularly on the writing side, because I think actors really should pay a little more attention to the writer's craft and the story from their perspective. I think that gets missed a lot. Not on a professional level. I can't speak on a professional level because I'm not there yet, but from someone who has worked on a lot of student productions, independent productions, it seems to be lacking, but not part of the process of, doing what we have to do as an actor.
The end result. Yeah, I mean, student films are a lot like that because, and we're always told, don't expect to get something for your showreel from a student film because their focus is not on the actor, which probably, I think, maybe leans towards their focus is not on the story either. It's about grabbing the visuals and grabbing the A, B, C, the end of the story. So they sort of lose that focus with what's on the paper. I can see what you're saying there. Mm. It's interesting.
And that's not shit canning student films at all because, they're learning and we're still learning too. We're all learning all the time. There's some of the, I've had some really great experiences on student films. You and I both had that amazing experience when Rebecca Dunker's Frequency, which really set the bar for me getting back into the acting side of it. I don't know how you feel with it.
Well, yeah, because that was my very first student film that I'd ever done.
Same.
And my first, not lead role, but support role. I know I only had one line in the whole movie.
It was a great line, though.
What was it? That fuck this shit with a blade across my throat. And then who got covered in my blood?
Hey.
Yes.
And
now that's a...
Sorry, go on.
Go on. You were about to say exactly what I was about to say, I think.
No, I was going to say my grandma.
We've done that twice.
Yeah, we did that twice. But I took my grandmother to the screening of Frequency, the end of year MAPS screening, and she went with my mother. And my mother was, well, I don't know about all the swearing, and I really don't like seeing you in the blood, covering up. And my 90-year-old grandmother was like, I loved it. It was great. And then the blood hit you, and you screamed. And she really got off on that scene. A little French lady in the front row.
I love
cheering
it.
And carrying on.
Now, that's funny for our journey, isn't it? So we've had two pretty good roles together, the first being Frequency, where I get to cut my throat and you got to cover my blood. And then our second one, which was only just recently, where what happened?
Your throat got cut and I got covered in your blood.
Well, someone else is done.
Someone else. That was this town. Yeah.
That's right. Mm. Yes. So on that very note, I think this episode will be called Cutthroat with Eva. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
So just go back to the training. So you're a bit like me. You do the workshops and get what you can get, which is good because you get to choose what you want. Mm. You get to choose how you study. Do you believe that a formal training background helps an actor, regardless of their age, whether they're coming in at 20 or 30 or they're late bloomers like us? Or do you think life skills and building on your craft with short courses and online training is better, or a bit of both?
Well, I can't really speak for the for the long-term commitment. It's something, and I think you are in the same boat, it's something just haven't been able to do. Life skills that we've had has, like, 100% helped me, I think. And I do enjoy the workshops. I do enjoy going to different workshops with different actors, different casting directors, different, you know, people in the industry, because it's great hearing all these different points of view. And like Jeff says, it's, you're not going to 100% agree with everyone, but you're going to take a little bit of something for your toolbox. And I think that toolbox is, it is great if you can. And I think I would, for me personally, I haven't been able to commit that length of time and that amount, that amount of money for a long-term study. But also I'm kind of regret that I didn't take that opportunity when I could, and I probably still could, because I think it, from my understanding, just having that solid knowledge of the industry that we've chosen and the history that goes with it, so studying scripts properly, particularly for theatre, studying the greats like Ibsen and Shakespeare and just being exposed to that, I think I would appreciate that solid, like, dive in for an extended period of time, just soaking it all up, if that makes sense. But I think everyone's journey is different, and we're going to do, if we, because we really want to do this, we are doing everything we can in our current path in life, or current where we are at the moment. We're doing everything we can to feed that need, to feed that desire. And I think for you and me, it is doing those different workshops, and it's working for us. We're getting work. So
that being on your journey, we've already talked. What do you think your journey so far has been, your best and worst moments? If you've had some best and worst moments,
I've had, and it's probably another reason why I have taken a step back from acting, because it actually shook me up pretty badly. And I did talk about this incident to you not that long ago. And it just came down to lack of respect from the actor that I was working with, and a lack of communication, a lack of understanding, and a lack of professionalism. And it shook me. I actually still feel quite affected about it, to the point where I am questioning not just my ability, but the ability of the people that I could work with in the future. So if an audition notice comes up, I'm actually hesitant about, do I want to do this again? Am I able to put myself in that environment again? Not thinking that it's going to be that experience again, but that, that anxiety, that anticipation.
And I remember you calling me and talking to me about that, and I know it's probably the first time I've seen you really upset. Actually, it was probably the second time. I think the first time I saw you really upset was when you were trying to get in the moment before I died on this town. And I remember you crying, and I'm going, is she really crying? Is she really upset? But I knew you were getting into the moment. But this time talking on the phone, I could hear that you were really affected by this, and it was hard because we were both throwing back the situation that occurred between us, trying to work out, are we misreading it, or did you misread it, or is it more than we think, or is it less? And it's all really hard. I think I boil down to that. It was a bit of maybe a bit of ego and a bit of lack of communication that then started to snowball effectively on set, didn't it?
Yeah,
which is a shame, because, I mean, and that can happen at any time in any place in acting. And it's probably a big point to show that it doesn't matter what your age is or what your experience is, that at any time something like this can happen. And we're in an industry now that's changing so much for that sort of stuff, you know, with support for actors and actresses on set, and having that, just getting away from that that casting couch sort of side of things.
Yeah.
So, and that's a whole story in itself. which is a good and bad thing that you have, but being able to have that ability now to say, hang on a sec, put your hands up and say, stop filming, I'm having an issue, I've got a problem.
Mm. But at the same time, you don't want to be that person. You don't want, and that was something I was very conscious of when I was trying to deal with the issue. Was like, I don't want to be seen as that actor that's going to be difficult, that is going to have an issue, that is going to be sensitive, that is going to, you know, delay production. And for the record, I didn't delay production at all. I still turned everything on 100% and did the job. But it's that's constantly in the back of my mind now. Am I seen as that actor, even though I don't believe I'd done anything wrong?
And I had a big chat on Clubhouse a couple of weeks ago. It was my first time I actually put my hand up and had a chat. And it was in relation to the death of the cinematographer in America with the shooting. Mm. And we got into the talking of having actors having that ability to, A, know what's right and what's wrong, but also being able to know what can I do or what should I do when I identify something.
Yeah.
Be able to stand up and say, I'm not comfortable. So now whether that's with a firearm or set or in, close quarter stuff,
yeah,
when they've got lovemaking scenes and that, to be able to say, I know what we're filming, I know we've agreed to it, but I'd like to stop right now because I don't know where we're going,
mm-hmm,
I don't know what we're doing, or I don't feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actors need to have that ability to be able to step up and say, can I just stop for a minute?
Yeah.
And unfortunately on sets, it's all about money and time and mm-hmm stuff, and actors, like you just said, are worried about, I don't want to be that actor.
Mm.
But I think they need to move past that because it's what happens afterwards. So, like, you know, you're still showing some visible signs that, you know, you're overcoming that experience. Mm. And heaven forbid if you would you go into each scene or into each audition thinking, do I really want to do this because of that?
Yeah.
So that's a bit.
But on a lighter note, my happiest experience, I don't know, I've had a lot of great experiences in acting. I know one from studying, I did save up to go to LA and do a group of workshops. And I did some with a group of other Australians who went over for it. But I was there 2 weeks beforehand, so I did some workshops on my own, which I love that independence. And that was an amazing experience because you're there in LA and you're doing a workshop alongside someone who had a rather large speaking role in NCIS, or somebody over here that had a speaking role in Breaking Bad. You know, these are people that are actually working in the industry. And,
wow.
I mean, yeah, I'm a bit full of myself. I did go in there thinking I was a pretty good actor, and I came out of it going, I'm a rubbish actor, but I know where I have to be. It was really as good as it is doing workshops and studying in Australia, Adelaide, Sydney, Melbourne, wherever, but actually being in LA where everybody's working and you're doing the workshops with them is, I think we really need, I would recommend anyone to experience that. Just to go to another country, into their industry and study with them, because it brings a whole other level to
beautiful
what you think you can do and what you can't do or whatever.
And now, trying to just move on a little bit from the training, but a quick question. So all the acting mythologies out there that they do learn at the drama schools, have you read or do you follow any particular ones? You know, the Meisner, the Stella Adlers or Chubbuck? Or Jeff Seymour?
Well, we're both Jeff Seymour fans, but I'm not 100%, and he'll probably never talk to me again, but I'm not 100% Jeff Seymour. I love how he opened up a completely different way of thinking for me as an actor.
But you can never be 100% anything, anyway.
No, that's it.
It's all about a toolbox, isn't it?
And I think this is what's good with those long-term, like Uniters and your long-term acting, is that you do get to delve more into your Meisner and you know, the masters in that way. So I never really resonated with many of them, particularly method acting. I struggle with that concept, and I actually get scared when I hear that I'm working alongside someone who's a method actor because I think that's the question I do have, is I keep meaning to bring it up with with Jeff, the next workshop is how do you adjust your style of acting if you are working opposite someone whose way of thinking or their approach to acting is completely different? Because I have been in that situation where someone's told me how I should deliver a line and what I should do to help them get their best performance without any consideration for me. Like, it was all about me, which is fine if you're the lead. But in my book,
Definitely. When
you go on set, everyone's the same level because we're all trying to tell the story. It's not about the lead. It's not about, you know, this and that and the other. It's about that moment in time we're trying to create.
Yeah, I suppose if the director's telling you to do something completely different, then you've got to find a way to do that.
Yeah.
And I understand where if you're just a bit part or you've just walked on set and you've got the lead actor that it's all about them. But, you know, so many times they'll deliver their lines and then go back to their caravan and you're talking to the sound guy who's standing in their place because they just want to film you so you don't get that and they didn't need you in the first place. But that's really interesting. So do you have anyone that inspires you to keep this journey going? So you said you have those moments where you know you want to get back into acting because you've taken that side path or whatever. So is there anyone or anything or that just inspires you to come back to it?
I don't think it's something that makes me want to come back to it. I think it's my own we're getting deep here. It's my own
deep's good.
Sense of self-worth. And whether or not I can do it is what stops me going further than I can. So I've always wanted to do this. I always wanted this creativity and to pursue it. But I think essentially it's me that stops me from doing more or pushing further. Or wow. Do you know what I mean? It's
Is it those moments, those I like to liken my acting journey to a graph and you have it the ups and the downs. And you tend not to recognize the ups as much as you recognize the downs. And I'll go running to my wife when I've had a down and something's not working right or I'm feeling overcome by it all and go, why am I doing this? Because we do spend a lot of time and we spend a lot of money trying to make it work. And especially when you're in a regional town like Adelaide for myself and you've spent a lot of time here, you get passed over so much from the eastern state actors and you're just going, am I going to make it? Why am I spending all this money? Why am I wasting my time? Am I wasting my time or am I not getting work because I suck?
Yeah, yeah.
That's my big, I say that all the time.
I get it. I completely relate. I understand. I mean, it'd be great if we could be doing this and paid to be doing this and not have to work and do anything else, that's for sure. But as far as making it, I don't know if that's, I don't know. Be nice to make it. I think that would be the bonus. But if we can just get, paid work, when
exactly.
And I like to think it. That you know that there's people like our agents and Angela Heesem and the SA Film Corps and Mercury X, they are trying to get not just get the work here in Adelaide, but help show like they're helping us. They're trying to help us by putting us forward. And at the forefront more so that people aren't looking at Sydney and Melbourne first, that they are eventually going to be looking at Adelaide first.
Definitely. I mean, and I know I've always said, where do you want to take your acting career? I said, well, I don't want to be a Mel Gibson. Well, if I end up being like a Mel Gibson, that's fantastic, but I'm not aiming to be. I don't have any visions or grandiose ideas that I'm going to be the Mel Gibson. I'm happy to just do the bit parts and that. And that's the fun of it is being on set.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to be able to get some. And I think I've done quite well with my journey.
I think you've done very great. Similar to yours.
But I've yet to get that professional paid role.
Mm-hmm.
You always get the phone call up and say, we need extras for this. And, it was background Mortal Kombat. But again, Mortal Kombat's such a big movie. I never expected to get anything. But when you watch it, they've got all those little 20-worders. The guy that's at the shop as they come in, that's what you want. You just need that first little role where you're, there you are.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it'll come. It'll happen. I'm putting it out there for the universe, man.
Yeah, so I've just got to get through to retirement when I get my nice superannuations paying out, and then I can come and join you over in New York.
Please do.
We were supposed to be in New York in April, but this stupid COVID ruined all that.
What do you do?
So I'll be glad when I can listen to a podcast that no longer talks about COVID, because it's just changed so much for so many people. Mm-hmm. All right. Stage, film, TV, or a combination? If you had a choice, what would you do? All or one? Hey there. We'll be right back after this quick break. Is booking work the only thing telling you that you are progressing as an actor? If so, you need more data. Castability is a game-changing new platform for actors to showcase their talents and power their careers with data on how casting professionals perceive them. The Castability app works as an audition simulator. Actors submit self-tapes, receive transparent rankings from vetted casting directors with their top-ranking work showcased to the industry. Want to figure out your casting? Finally find out why you're not booking? Start tracking and growing your craft. Find the app in your app store or go to www.castability.actor for more information. And if you use the promo code LATEBLOOMERACTOR, you will receive 30% off your first month membership. The Castability app is made by actors for actors.
It's tough. All of them, obviously. There's nothing like, it's so thrilling being on a film set. The scale of it, even if it's from a student production to, you know, a larger production where we've worked as extras, it's just that. I don't know, there's something intoxicating about it. And with all the commotion that's going on around you, being able to get into the role and do your time, but you've got the time to do it. Television is great because I like the fast-paced nature of it, particularly with your soap operas, the episodical.
Episodical.
Yes. But, you know, because it's got to be done quick because there is the tighter schedule. And you know, so I like that fast-paced environment. And then on stage, that cycle when you're on stage where you have the audience there and you're giving to them but they're giving to you, so it's like this intake-outtake thing. You're giving them something to react on. You're feeding off their reaction. And I love that. Metaphysical. I love that cycle that occurs when you're on stage. And I haven't done much theatre. I think I've only done two or three productions in theatre. But as a singer, as a performer singer, it's a very similar scenario where there's an energy that you are giving off that people are feeding off and returning the favour with their energy. So
well, the audience is there, isn't it? With film and TV, you know there's an audience watching, but not when you're making it.
But I don't miss it when you're doing film or TV. I don't miss not having an audience, if that makes sense. Just because it's a different medium.
Yeah, and that's what I love the camera, especially when you're on set. You know, you do a scene and you get to run behind the camera on the playback. You just see it right there and the depths of, you know, coming on screen. That's what I enjoy and the end result. So beautiful. And where are we? Now I'm trying to work out where we're going. I think we've almost answered most of my questions without actually me asking them, which is what I love. looking at your career that you do, with the sound and the audio, can you work your acting around the career? When you're busy in that, does the pressure make it hard to take up the acting jobs? If you look at me, I do my shift work and you're trying to make things work because you have to go to work the next day or you can't get the leave. Do you find that difficult or challenging?
It is 100%, particularly because a lot of my work, originally because a lot of my work was overseas. So we have attractions that run in the US, Mexico, Malaysia. Every now and then we might do something in Queensland, Philippines, Singapore, Hong Kong. So we've always got stuff going on and travel's involved. So it's definitely difficult about that. If I know I've got a job coming up where I'm going to be overseas for an extended period, then I just won't I won't look at the audition boards and I'll let my agent know. And although she'll be rather cross at me, she'll be aware of it. But if I do have something that I get asked to do or that I audition for and then a job comes up, then I'll let the guys know and then they're pretty cool about it. They'll either, you know, kind of massage things around me being in and out or because I don't really have on my job, I do everything. I don't really have anybody I can go, can you do this whilst I'm gone? I've got to be able to make
it. If you're gone, it's not being done.
Yeah.
I think that's a big difference between the younger actors and older actors is we've got established careers which can either be make it harder or make it easier depending on the flexibility. Mm. You always hear the stories of the actors, they're working, waiting and that sort of stuff. So they've essentially got to quit a job when they get an acting job, which is good because then they switch, but then they've got to come back because you still have to pay the bills. Mm. So,
and that's where casual work comes in really well. I did the brief time that I was back in Adelaide, I got a job stacking shelves at Woolworths, which I have a kind of a mixed feeling of pride and shame, like to admit it. But great bunch of people there, great environment, and I could 100% see that that was a job that I could do and still uphold my acting ambitions, you know, my creative ambitions. In performing arts. So, and I think I have the advantages. I don't have kids, so I don't have a family that I'm responsible and take care of. Whereas that's something I know that has been it's a huge part of your life. You know, you adore your kids. You have a marvelous wife. And the fact that you've got their support, you know, to help you along in the journey as a late blooming actor, it is.
Not a lot of people have that. A lot of help. And that, and you did answer that sort of question. Is that, you know, I had a question here is how family and friends consider your acting? Do they support it sort of thing? So I think you need that support because if you have any conflicts there, then it can make it really difficult. And I think my wife, my kids are probably my biggest support because they're there all the time knowing that I'm doing this sort of stuff. But it's at those moments when you want to drop it all that they step forward. And it all comes down to when, you know, I think my acting sucks. And you don't want to listen to your family and friends because they're always going to tell you you're great.
Can you honestly
tell me, please tell me if I do suck. I don't want to be that person on The Voice who clearly can't 100%. Sing for shit.
Yes.
And they're actually surprised when the judge says you can't sing.
Mm.
So obviously mum or dad or brothers or siblings or friends have said, oh, you're a great singer, you should go on The Voice, you know. As a big joke. So,
but I think the fact that you're still getting work and you're still getting auditions, like that's testament to your ability. So.
Mm. And I think we're the same. We've both been on enough short films and indie productions to then be able to watch them back and say, yeah, I'll watch that. It's good. So,
well, you can.
I think that's a good thing. I say, and okay, here's a good one for us oldies. Memorization of lines. Do you think it's easier or harder
for
us?
Well, for me, it's easy. And I think it's that comes from working as a musician in bands, like having to learn lyrics for songs. So there was a melody to it.
Then
I found that very easy. And I just kind of applied that with script as well. So with a song, the song is about an emotion. It's about someone, how they're feeling. And so you learn the story of the song and that dictates the lyrics. So, and I kind of apply the same thing with a script. So, okay, so what's the emotion here? What are they feeling? What's the story that they're trying to tell? And I do memorize the lines and get the gist of it and all. It's kind of always been, not always been easy, but it's been relatively easy for
me. It's interesting.
To take that on.
Beautiful. All right, and I know we're mindful of time, so I'm going to sort of.
Oh, I could talk to you for days, Dave.
I know, it's terrible,
isn't
it?
Right.
Just a quick question, bringing it back to the US, because you were talking about being in the US and going to the training classes and that. Again, focusing us oldies or late bloomers, do you think, from what you've seen, would it be harder going to the States as an oldie with no really working history, or a youngster going to the States with no working history, or do you think it would be exactly the same?
I think it would be exactly the same. And not only because, but one reason being, there are roles for everybody every size, every shape, every race, every colour. We've really got to, like, work on that diversity for sure. But there is always a call for older people. And I used to think, okay, well, I'm not going to get a role as an older person because they'll just get someone who has a name, who's worked in the industry since they were a kid, who's now my age, they'll just get them in the role. But there's so much content being made now, and you will hear it from the same from casting directors in Australia as you hear from casting directors in the US, is that they're always looking for someone new. They're not necessarily looking for that big name that's going to get them known. It's just they want to find the right person for the role. And I think as actors, maybe, you know, everybody wants to win the Oscar. So do casting directors. You know, they want to build their reputation. They want to do their job. They want to, you know, be known to be good at what they do by finding the right actors. And that's where we come in. We've just got to expose ourselves, and which is another reason why I think it's good to go and study and do stuff and meet people in other countries in their film industries. Did that answer your question? I'm Beautiful. Very good at going off on definitely. Tangents. Sorry, David.
No, I think it's a lot. I always hear that don't go to the States until you've got some professional credits here, which probably makes perfect sense.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. But I wouldn't not go because
you've got the opportunity to go and you can afford it.
Yeah, if you can afford it. And you're always going to meet people, especially if you're doing workshops. You're going to meet people who have experience and knowledge or who know somebody. I'm not saying you're going to meet someone who's then going to give you a role on the film, but it's just the same way that you would network here. You can network over there. But two things you should not go to the US without. You should not go over with the proper visa or green card, and you should not go over without a well-done accent. I'm sick to death of seeing actors. It's embarrassing for me seeing actors in Adelaide in particular who say, oh, they've studied with this one like dialect coach and say
for the weekend workshop.
For the weekend or whatever, and say they have, you know, an intermediate accent, and I've seen their work using that accent, and it's appalling. And it's no, you have to be working on it every day. You've got to be solid, because even though you might go down to the fish and chip shop with your accent and they'll think you're from America, but you go to America with that accent, nah, you will get called out. So
that's where I get worried, because I'm tone deaf and I just can't get the accent. And my plan is to have a one-on-one with a good instructor and just do 10 weeks, 20 weeks, however long. Every instructor I've spoken to said that they've never met someone they couldn't teach, as in teach to 100% to walk in America. So it is something you can do, but you need to know that it has to be 100%. And I hear that all the time from TAFTA and the casting directors and that. Said, don't go into an audition saying you can do an American accent if it's at 75%. Mm-hmm. It needs to be at 95 to 100%. Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect sense. You did lead up. This is my last question before we get into the fast round, and I'll let you get on with your wonderful dinner.
Thank you.
I was going to say, can I join you? No, I can't. You're in New York and I'm in Adelaide. You mentioned the words before, are you making it? It's very cliched when it comes to acting, I think, but when I've written the word cliched down, are you making it as an actor, or what would you consider a successful target to be in your journey? Where would you like to see you be and say, I'm happy?
Yeah, I am doing it as an actor. So as far as making it, well, I'm not getting the big paid jobs yet. And I think, like I mentioned before, that is the ultimate goal for me, is to be able to make a living doing, like, performing. That would be it for me. It would be great to be well known and called up to, you know, can you come and work on this set and work with this set? And we, you know, you have that clout, that would be great. But I still want to be that person that works for it. I want to get used to auditioning. I want to get used to working on sets or on stage, or I just want to be doing it all the time and to be paid for it as a bonus. So I just want to do it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And I think the biggest thing I've always read is that if you're going into it to be famous, you're doing it for the wrong reason.
Correct.
And the moment you're not enjoying it, you need to stop it. So, yes, you need to feed yourself. You need to be able to pay the bills. So if you can be doing that either with your secondary job that works with your acting, then I think you're making it. So in my case, I go, well, I reckon I'm making it at the moment because I'm making it work for where I'm at in my career, so to speak. And I'm fortunate that when I do retire, I'll be able to say, do whatever comes up because I don't need to. I won't need to rely on the acting to pay the bills, so I can do whatever. And that will mean that if I'm working, whether it's student films or NCIS, then I'm making it.
Yeah.
So that's
cool. Very good. And don't let anyone tell you different either. I've had a couple of situations where, you know, what do you do? I'm an actor. Oh, have I seen you in anything? Well, probably not. Oh, so you only do it as a hobby. So no, I do it because I love it. Yeah, okay, you do hobbies because you love it. But don't let anybody, you know, downplay.
Yes.
Don't play what acting is to you.
A few podcasts say exactly that. They talk about what do you say when someone says, oh, so have I seen you in anything? So it's really hard. So you just say, well, no, I do a lot of independent production films and student films, and I'm really enjoying the journey. So let them have that. So, all right, we're going to wind up with the fast round now.
Oh, I'm not good at this.
And they're never the fast round. I've heard some say one-word answers or one-sentence answers.
From me, you'll get a monologue. You'll get a monologue from me.
That's cool. Well, it's all about the information. It's all about the information. All righty. I don't know if you saw this one. I sent it in the last email to give you a heads up. So if you didn't see it, you're going to have to think real quick. What is your T-shirt quote?
It's all about me.
In black bold writing, capital letters, right?
Red, actually.
Red. It's all about me. I love it. What one person, dead or alive, would you like to have dinner with? Now, that question's never been asked before. This is brand new.
See, there's just too many people. My father.
Ah, beautiful. What would you tell yourself if you could go back to when you first decided to get into acting?
No. Just do it.
Don't do it.
No.
No.
No, just do it. Enjoy the ride. There we go. Don't take yourself so seriously. Yeah.
All right. And finally, and you don't have to answer it, but it's my who would you like to see on the podcast? Do you know any other fellow late bloomer actors out there? Or do you know someone that could provide some guidance for us that you would like to hear their insights for late bloomer actors?
Well, I hope you're getting Jeff on the show.
He's already said he would.
Oh, fantastic. I'm glad. I'm looking forward to more people meeting.
When he's finished his play.
Oh, what? Oh, we've got to catch up on Jeff because I haven't spoken to him in a few months. So.
You know where he is at the moment, don't you?
No, where?
He's in New York. Doing a play. I can't remember the theatre.
Oh, I've got to go. I'm calling him. I'm calling him right now.
He's in rehearsals at the moment, and I'm not sure. The tickets are on sale already, so it must be coming up in the new year.
Holy shit.
Kelly and I said the joke to Kelly, I said we should just jump on a plane now that the borders are semi-open and just go, because A, we wanted to go to New York anyway, and B, to see Jeff on stage. So he is on stage. He's put it on Facebook. Have a look. Looks like a really, really good show. He was asked personally by the director to play the part. So he's rented out his apartment back in LA, and he's over in New York doing this. So I think he's very happy because you know how much he loves his stage.
Yeah. Oh, man.
There you go.
Thanks for that tip.
And, yes, I'll be getting Jeff on board because I consider him my mentor and my coach. I know he doesn't like his actors to say it.
I could put you in touch with Rob Brownstein as well. He's another actor that I've worked with in LA. But he's been acting all his life. But he's one that is definitely doing where I aspire to be. He's got those smaller roles in things. He was in Impeachment recently. He was in Straight Outta Compton. He's just had parts like that and different things. So he'd be another good one to speak to. But also on another level, Mel Daly, she sold her a few years ago. She produced and wrote Inc., which was a short web series that I was in. And she sold her investment business to start her own production company. And so I think she would be a good one from that side of things. And as an actor, I mean, I'm in love with Kate Bonney. I think she's amazing. So I think she'd be another great person for you to.
Yes, definitely. I have Kate in mind. And she's done really well at the SAS Awards.
Oh, she did great when winning best screenplay. So well deserved.
Her movie with Natasha Wangadeen, yep. That was good. All righty, Eva.
David.
How was that? Hey, I didn't think I'd get past 20 minutes. I thought I'd have my moments where I just go, I've got nothing to say. But we're at 53 minutes.
We're doing all right, man.
That's a perfect length for a podcast. Thank you very much for being my first guest.
Thank you so much. It's such an honour. Really is an honour, man. And I think it's marvellous what you're doing. I think it's sensational. You're a very brave and very talented man. Oh, yeah. I think it's...
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go far.
I try to do... It's like my Adelaide Actors and Extras Facebook page. I like to give as much as I receive. Mm. So people give me something that I want to hand it back as well. So, and I've got that ability to do it as well. So
you do. I think it's wonderful what you do in our community and how you bring us all together. So thank you.
And thank you for coming together on our podcast tonight.
Yay!
I'm going to sign off.
Great.
Thank you very much for such a wonderful session.
Just going to have a 12-year-old leg of woolen. So
beautiful. Great. Two glasses.
Merry Christmas, Dave.
Merry Christmas to you. Goodbye. Thank you. Thank you for listening. This podcast is supported by Cast Ability. Ditch your guessing game and become a strategist. We are all biased when it comes to the type of roles that best suit us. The Cast Ability app is an audition simulator where actors collect data to power their careers. Gathering transparent rankings from our established casting directors, your scores show you the archetypes, genres, and quality metrics where you make a strong impression. You can then use that data to make informed, strategic choices like headshot styling or how to pitch yourself to reps. Empower yourself by learning how casting experts rank your work. Just download the app and purchase a credit or monthly membership on their website at www.castability.actor. And if you use the promo code LATEBLOOMERACTOR, you will receive 30% off your first month membership. The Castability app is made by actors for actors. You have been listening to the Late Bloomer Actor podcast. Please like and subscribe on your favourite podcast player and leave a review if you can. Also, please share it with your friends and family and on your social media. If you would like to become a subscriber to the show to support and help keep the show running, it would certainly be most appreciated. Please find a link in the show notes where you can support the show for as little as $3 per month. You can cancel at any time. In return, you will know that you're contributing to each episode and keep a lookout for future subscriber-only content and opportunities. The podcast has been recorded with Riverside FM. Check out the show notes for a link. If you have any comments on this episode or ideas for future episodes, please drop me an email at thelatebloomeractor@gmail.com. And finally, the music in the intro and outro is written and composed by Aidan Hendry. Check him out on Spotify. Just search for him under Delusion. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on set.